So first of all, let me remind you that we're not meeting next week. So we have one more class left in this session, and that will happen 2 weeks from today. And then there won't be a break. So you're getting your break a week early, in effect. So we will go straight from the last class in session three to the first class in session four. So this week and next we are dealing with knowledge, although we'll have a lot to say about space and time. I think it's beginning to be more clear how space and time and knowledge interact with one another. So I want to do some a kind of orientation. I want to give us the context for what we're doing, and that will take a little while, and it will lead us into models in a kind of a, well, we'll see, you'll see. The reason I'm saying that is I'm not sure how specifically we'll get into the content of this chapter. I do know that I don't expect to cover the material on the witness this week. We will leave that for next time. But the other material on models I hope to be able to get to, but I do want to lay some things out and then have us do a practice, and we'll see how much time we have after that. Okay, so it's good to remember that our underlying theme for this whole course is activating the time-space knowledge vision, and the vision that time-space knowledge offers is a new vision of reality. And that's really, it's important, it seems to me, to keep that in mind. It raises the question almost immediately, what's our ongoing vision? What's our current vision? What's our old vision of reality? And that question is actually, I think you could say, it's not a question that we usually ask because we take reality for granted. So the kind of natural approach to reality is we just accept as real whatever we're taught is real. And the culture is very good at giving us an understanding of what counts as real. We all learn that as we're growing up, and we don't ever question it. But suppose that we did decide to question it. What could we say about the old vision of reality? So this is, we're already at kind of a sophisticated level, right? We're already saying, well, you know, I'm ready to question what I and other people take for granted as being real. So I want to understand what's the old vision of reality. And the thing that's interesting about that, and this will lead us into a discussion of models, it seems to me we don't really think in terms of having a vision of reality, even if we're taking this more sophisticated view. What we understand, what we imagine, is that we have a model of reality. You know, we have a model, for instance, of time, you could say. You might say an understanding of time, but I'm not going to really argue for the distinction between the two, but I think the understanding implies a model. So our model of time, for instance, is that it flows from moment to moment, from past to present to future, and each moment pops up and then disappears, and then there's the next moment, something like that. Kind of very straightforward, our ordinary understanding, but it is an understanding, and it doesn't show up in terms of a vision. It shows up in terms of a model. And the reason for that is because that's the way our model works. Our model doesn't really have room in it for vision. We'll talk about a little bit about there are places around the edges where we talk about having a vision. But we don't have a vision of reality. We have a model of reality. And that's because the model tells us that the way to understand reality is to have the right model in place. Maybe it tells us that we don't need models, real is real. But again, I'm saying if we get a little more sophisticated, then we say, okay, that's how we understand things. The model of the way to understand reality is to have the right model. So what happens in our way of understanding is that visions get transformed into models, which means, of course, that something very fundamental is lost. And I want to say something about that in a moment. But first, I want to talk about that just for a moment in terms of what we're doing in this course, because one way to think about, well, let me talk specifically about variations. So for a while, I was calling those, I guess, walk-around practices, right, or walkabout practices. Lately, I've been saying, well, you know, there are exercises you can do or practices you can do that are just variations, variations on what we normally understand to be the case. Now, very often, it doesn't have to be the case, but very often, the way that we start to implement a variation, the way we think about it or start to work with it, is that we propose to ourselves a new model. We say, this is not an example that we've actually used, but maybe we say, what if time didn't move at all? What if past, present, and future were like a big block? There are views in physics like that, and sometimes in philosophy, that we live in a block universe and past, present, and future are really all present together. Well, that would be a different model, right? At that point, we might say theory, but still, it's a model. And we might say, okay, I'm going to try the variation in which I experience my world. It's not just going to be theoretical. I experience my world as though past, present, and future were all present together at the same time. So what we're doing when we work the variation is we're going to the level of models. We're saying, this is the ordinary model, but what if I tried a different model? And then what if I tried to really turn that model into my actual lived experience, which is not, well, in a way, that is what we do. You know, we have a model of time that says one moment, one moment, one moment, past, present, future, linear time, and so on. And we live our lives on the basis of that model, and that's how we experience time. And, you know, at least until we look a little more closely, that's what we would say if you ask us how we experience time. So when we work with the variation, very often we're challenging or questioning the model. Now, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, there may be ways to do variations in which we really question our experience without worrying so much about the model. But there's a little bit of a problem there, because if you change the experience but don't change the underlying model, then, you know, somehow the model will maybe has to be modified a little bit, but will basically keep it in place and so that it accounts for the experience. We'll just find ourselves back in some, maybe some slightly different version of the existing model. I think that's one of the problems, actually, with some ways of approaching meditation, where you have a certain kind of experience, and then your model has to make room for it. But you keep the same model, you just tinker with it a little bit, as we say in English. You make a few adjustments. You know? And that means that you're still stuck with all the unexamined assumptions and presuppositions of the prevailing model. When we do a variation, we are not just changing the model, not just coming up with a new theory. We're really seeing, well, what would it be like to experience life that way, to experience our own life and what happens to us in that way. And that doing that is actually a step, you could say, in moving from a model to a vision. Because visions are lived, you know, in some fundamental sense. I'll say something more about that in a moment. But in some fundamental sense, visions are, you know, unlike models, which stay theoretical and then provide the basis, the kind of structure. In one of the words Rinpoche uses in this context is logos, but we haven't talked about that and won't for quite a while. But they provide a structure, and then we experience within the framework of that structure. But the model itself doesn't come alive. Visions come alive. And that's actually, in a way, what's characteristic, it seems to me, of a vision. I'm not, that's just my take. I'm not relying on anything in the TSK books when I say that. But, you know, we can look at it. Okay, so first I want to take a little bit of take a couple of minutes here to talk about what our present model is, and with the understanding that the model is the present vision of reality, but part of the vision of reality is that there, you know, visions become models. There really is no such thing as a vision except around the edges. Reality is just reality, and then we have a model which makes sense out of reality. You could say also a story that makes sense out of reality. There's a lot of words that ways of thinking about this that are variations and that we use in different contexts, but they're all kind of related to this idea of model. So what's the present model? What's the vision that we want to replace, really, with the new vision of reality in time, space, and knowledge? Well, this is pretty self-evident, pretty straightforward, but I want to make sure we've covered it. First of all, and we've talked about this, the model tells us that time consists of a series of moments, one moment after another, linear progression, right? And all of those moments are related to the self as the one who experiences. And what I mean by this, and this has been in the reading last week or this week, I'm not sure, the whole idea of linear time with past, present, future structure, the location of the present is related back to the self, right? I'm at the temporal center of reality. What I'm experiencing in the present is real. And then the past is gone. It's no longer real. The future is gone. It is not yet here yet. It hasn't become real. So reality is related to my being in the present. So that's our sense of what time is about. Space is, I'm going to simplify a little bit, but space is a container, right, for physical objects. Right? So things show up in space, and whatever shows up in space has to occupy its own particular space. It can't occupy the same space as anything else. So there's all these objects which are separated from one another in physical space. And because I'm wanting to bring the self and the knower in each of these cases, as I did with time, when you talk about the self with regard to space understood in that way, the self doesn't really occupy space. It stands outside. It's the observer, the bystander, Rinpoche says in the first TSK book and also elsewhere. It's really separate from space. There's no room. And this is, that's enough for that. And then the third is what we've actually been talking about. That is, what's the present model for knowledge? And that is that knowledge arises through models, not through visions, right? That's why we don't talk about vision, you know, about the current vision of reality. Knowledge arises through models. It arises through statements that get made, true propositions that can be justified. That's a kind of a technical, philosophical definition. But the basic idea is that knowledge arises through developing a model and then refining that model and so on. And the one who applies the model, refines the model, you could say owns the model, is the self. So that's where the self comes in there. And again, you could say, you know, the self is not really part of the model, although in some contexts, there's a kind of a version of the self. Okay, so those are that's the ordinary understanding. In each case, and that's what I've been trying to suggest, the self is really outside. It's the one that does. I mean, in one way, it's at the center. It's absolutely at the center. And in another way, it stands outside. So Eliana would like me to say a little bit more about this distinction between a model and a vision. Okay. Models and visions, in a sense, are the same. But a model, let's see, what's the best way to say this? The vision is something that we can live. Let me give an example, because, and I was going to talk about this a little bit later. We do have a sense in our experience of having a vision. And the most famous example, I think, even though it doesn't use that language, the most famous example in American history anyway, it gets talked about, you know, it's the standard example, is when Martin Luther King gave that speech in which he said, "I have a dream," right? That's the phrase that gets quoted all the time. My dream is, and then to tell you the truth, I can't remember so well, but it was a dream of equality between the races, of a better culture, a more fair, just, and equitable culture. So King used the word dream there, but I think that's still the right example to think of when you talk about having a vision. So the place that we tend to put visions is in the future. You know, a future that we hope will come into being. So we say, you know, my vision of how, you know, whatever we say, how America could work, how Buddhism will come to the West, how individuals can fulfill themselves, and then we say something about it. And it's always in the future. It's not something that's happening right now, but there is a reality to it. And at least in the way I'm using the language, this is not, doesn't square with what Martin Luther King said, but it's different from a dream. If you have a dream, it's kind of like an alternate reality that shows up, like when you dream at night, but it doesn't inspire you. It doesn't engage you in the present. Whereas a vision does, even though you see it as something that will happen in the future or maybe won't ever happen at all, it has this quality of transforming your present experience. You know, the vision is the part of your way of being in the world that gives it a kind of coherence and meaning. And the place that we allow for that as an alternative to just ordinary experience is in the future or in some imagined realm where something, you know, maybe it would be in the future, or maybe you say, I don't think it'll ever happen, but it's still the vision that inspires and guides me. Well, we don't have that kind of vision, a kind of an inspiring, guiding vision of our ordinary experience. What we have is a model that makes sense out of experience. But we've lost the visionary element. The model really covers the same territory, you could say. I mean, maybe it tends to be more worked out, have more details. But it covers the same territory as the vision. It's what gives us meaning, but not in a kind of inspiring way, not in a way that transforms what goes on. It's just sort of the everyday way things are. It's a model that explains things. So we have a model of how an atom works. That's not so interesting for us in terms of how we live our lives. But we have a model of how we live our lives. And we think of it as being a model, and more like the model of how an atom works. We don't think of it as being a vision. And that, so that's, you know, and the reason for that, that's what I was trying to say at the beginning, is that a vision, or rather a model, the model we have says that the only way you can get knowledge, the only way you can understand things, is through models, not through visions. Visions are just kind of dreams. Now, we do allow for it in this kind of special case of the future, the Martin Luther King example. Okay, so there are a couple of other comments about that. Michael says, vision draws us off the couch and out the door. Models keep us seated, and we don't see the door. Yeah, I mean, I like the first part of that a lot. Visions are what get us going in the morning, you could say. And so in a kind of limited sense, you know, a lot of people in this culture find their meaning in terms of their family and their hopes for how their children are going to do, are going to live their lives in years to come. Or maybe what they're going to accomplish in their lives or in their businesses or something like that. That's going in the direction of vision. I'm not so sure that it's all the way to vision, but that kind of inspiration, visions really do have to do with that. The second part of what you say, Michael, when you say models keep us seated and we don't see the door, it's kind of true. And my only hesitation there is we see the door, but we don't see that it's a door into other possibilities. It's just the door that we walk out and we get into our car and we drive off and so on. We lose the possibility, the transformative possibility. And that's one reason why the word vision, I think, is really important for TSK, because the idea is that reality embodies this possibility of transformation in every moment. So it's just the right word, you know. If I mean, you could have, Rinpoche could have written the book called Time, Space, and Knowledge, a new Model of Reality. And that would have put it in a very particular camp. And, of course, a lot of people would pick up the book and read it that way and say, oh, I've always been interested. I hear this all the time. People say, oh, I think it's so interesting, the relationship between time and space and consciousness, let's say, or between the mind and time and space, something like that. What they're looking for most often, not always, of course, is a model that's going to explain a different way of thinking about how that works. They're not looking for a vision, a transformative vision. So in that sense, yeah, we don't see the door. We don't see where the door leads. We see the door, but we open it up and we only see a certain landscape, you know. And that landscape is already the same landscape that was there before we opened the door. So in that sense, we never really opened the door. That's probably confusing what I just said, but I hope the basic idea there is important. So Remco asks, do you have another word for vision that has the same meaning? In Dutch and German, it's difficult to find a good translation that means the same as the English word vision. The Dutch visier, I guess, is more like a plan for the future. And the German subtitle of the TSK book is very German. Raumzeiten der Kenntnis, Wirklichkeitsschau. Right. That's what I believe it is in German, if I remember correctly. Which is not the word vision. Although I think there is the word in German, Vision. I'm not sure. Okay, so as to the question, do I have another word? Let me think about that. I don't have one that comes to mind right away. So I'm making a note for myself. A new vision of reality. Whatever the word would be, and I invite you to think about this too, it would have this transformative quality. And so that's why the model, again, in America, if you're in another country, it probably doesn't mean quite the same thing. You know, King's vision you know, there are certain moments in history, and I think this is probably true in every country's history, where a visionary leader comes forth. That's another place to look for what a vision means, right? A leader who offers the possibility of a real transformation. So, the translation in German is not, I thought it was Wirklichkeitsschau, at least for vision. Anyway, it says, Aufbruch zum, okay, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Aufbruch, I don't know how you translate that. You know, entering a new dimension of experience of the world and reality. A dimension of experience or a new dimension of experience. That's kind of gesturing in the direction of vision. So here's a couple of others, suggestions. Michael says, waking up to previously unseen possibilities, seeing ourselves in a new light. Yeah, I think that's good. That's definitely a part of what we're looking for. It's, you know, and maybe what's what I'd probably connect with most in that is, I'm sorry, I have to get back to it. The chat window isn't big enough for this burst of suggestions we've just had. I missed Bruce's, I see. So Michael says, previously unseen possibilities. So I like the word unseen there because, after all, vision is a word that has to do with seeing. And it really is seeing in this transformative way. There's a phrase, maybe it's from the Bible originally, I'm not sure. It says, the scales fell from my eyes. That is, you know, my eyes were covered up, I was blind, and then I saw differently. That has some of that quality. It's like the world is transformed. Okay, let me go back. Bruce says, a friend, Bonita Roy, sometimes uses the word view, capitalized, to refer to the operative deep structure of our understanding and our experience, to be contrasted with model or paradigm, which is more formal and typically more limited or applied. Yeah, I think that the word view, I mean, I wouldn't propose that as a better word than vision, because I think it tends to be too limited. It's more limited. Vision is a really wonderful open word. And it's interesting for those of you who are involved in the Nyingma tradition that the Tibetan word that's translated as view is tawa, but it can also mean vision. A view can become a vision, or a view can operate as a vision. But we tend to think of a view as something distanced, which is exactly what vision is not. Vision is something that enters into us, and it's almost like being infected with the virus. The vision is like something, once this vision is active in us, then everything looks different. Or at least everything within a large range of experience. So let me go on to a couple of other suggestions that people have made. It's a great thing to think about. Beck, you might want to write about this some more, those of you who are writing assignments. I hadn't thought of this as the assignment, but it would be a good one. What does vision actually mean? Or can you come to terms with the difference between vision and model, which is how we got started on this? So Hayward says, a new vision offers a new way of being. And I think that's, a new way of being. So the German, as Remco gives it there, is new dimensions of experience, but not quite as strong or powerful as a new way of being. I do think a new way of being is good. A new vision of reality is also a new way of being. And in the first TSK book in particular, Rinpoche goes through time and space and knowledge, and then part four of the book is being. So the vision gives access to a new way of being. That does seem to me to be important. Let's see. And Sudhi also says a way of being. Yeah. Okay, so John says, certain physicists would say they have a vision of reality. Do they live it? Are we able to live it by reading their vision? And then, okay, let's stop there. He has a second part to his comment. I think that's exactly the point, isn't it? That you might call that a vision of reality, and I do vaguely have in the back of my mind that some physicists talk that way. What we're saying, that doesn't count because it doesn't have this transformative dimension. It doesn't lead to a new way of being, and they don't live it, right? And we can't live it. Although, I'm going to tell you a little story. We're running, we're not really going to cover the material I thought, so I might as well take a minute to tell you this story. A couple of you may have heard it, but in the 1980s and 90s, one of the people who studied TSK in Holland at the Dutch Center was a fellow named Henk van der Horst. That whole family has been involved. Elske, whom some of you know in Holland, is his daughter, and his grandson works at Odeon. But Henk and Wil van der Holst were at the center in Holland, and Henk studied but was also very frustrated by, I will have to say, the TSK vision. So Henk was also a very famous astronomer. And in the 1940s in particular, he had made a really important discovery. And it so happened that one time I was flying over to Europe and I was going to be teaching TSK in Holland, and I expected to see Henk there. And I was reading a book about astronomy on the plane. And suddenly, they started talking about the discoveries of Henk van der Holst. That was the first time I'd come across that. And what Henk had discovered, and I don't remember the details, but what he had discovered was that the universe was 100 times bigger than anybody had ever imagined. He had established the evidence for that. And I remember I sat on the plane and I tried to imagine what it was like to be Henk. So it was very helpful that I knew him personally. What it was like to be Henk and to walk outside and look at the universe and have a sense that it was 100 times bigger than anybody had ever imagined, at least anybody in our culture. And what I imagined at that point, I think, has something to do with vision. You know? If you have a vision of reality in which things are just so much more vast, or maybe you would say so much more intricately related, or there are a number of things that could come up, well, you know, maybe that is transformative. I have a couple of other stories stored up, but I'm not going to go into them. That's just the one that comes to mind. So then John's second comment was, indigenous cultures also have visions of reality that are lived in many cases. Could we say models become subconscious and visions stay conscious and dynamic? Well, that's interesting. I think a little too complicated to go into here. I like the dynamic part of it. I don't know. I think that it is true that, you know, other cultures, indigenous cultures, have a vision that is alive. You know, models are not alive in the way that visions are alive. Whether they're conscious in our sense of it, that's a little bit different. It may be that there's a part of your experience that is alive and beyond question and informs everything you do, but it's not conscious, at least in the sense that you could describe it to somebody or narrate it to somebody. It's just part of the furniture, and it's part of what you take for granted, but not in the sense of taking it for granted so that it just disappears, you don't even notice it. No, it means that the universe is meaningful. So one way of talking about this that people sometimes do talk about is that we live in a disenchanted world. If you say to live in an enchanted world is to live in a meaningful world, I think it's fair to say, it may not be exactly right, that to live in a meaningful, enchanted world is to live in a world that is informed by a vision that has not been turned into something less than a vision, which is what happens when you start thinking of knowledge in terms of models. So, you say visions stay conscious, and I gave that one particular spin. In one way, I think it's fine to say that. Bruce cites another writer, but he can't remember his name, who says that models and programs seldom transform the world. To do that takes the river of vision. Well, I'm not familiar with that phrase, but yes, there's a bumper sticker that you see sometimes. You used to see it more in this country that said well-behaved women rarely make history. And you could say a model, the whole point of a model is to be well-behaved, to settle everything down, to sort of get it in the right place. And then everything behaves properly, and there's no inspiration in that. A vision, in a sense, can't be tamed in that sense. They've lost that transformative dimension. Okay. Klaus says, it's a new sound of reality, a new smell, taste, and feel of reality. Yes, that's very nice. And my natural mode is not so much the sensory mode. But reality is real in every dimension. You know, it really does have to do with the senses as well. And somehow, you know, because of who we are as human beings, we privilege seeing. So we do talk about a new vision of reality. And a lot of words connected to sight have to do with knowledge. It's less common, far less common, to use words related to the other senses. Occasionally we use the word hear. You know, there was a kind of idiom in English that's not so popular anymore, but it was 10 or 20 years ago. People would say, "I hear you." And what they meant was, "I understand you, right? I know what you mean." And they were trying to point toward a way of knowing that was more than just seeing in this distanced way. So yes, it can go in that direction. And Philip says, a very, very deep feeling, certainty of how things are, or should be, or will be. Question mark. So he's wondering, is that a good way of thinking about it? Yeah, I think the quality of certainty is good. You know, at the beginning of the chapter from Love of Knowledge from this time, at the beginning of the second chapter, the first chapter is about models. The second chapter is about interpretation. And at the beginning of that chapter on interpretation, Rinpoche says, you know, we've got to be able to engage our experience. And it's a kind of paradoxical statement, because the previous chapter basically said whatever experience we have is going to be shaped by the models we use to make sense of it. But when he's talking about that experiential dimension, we've got to be able to engage that. I think that that's related to this sense of feeling or certainty. If not a certainty, you know, I know what my name is, I'm certain about that. That doesn't seem to have much to do with vision. Certainty is at a deeper kind of gut level, you could say, which I'm probably thinking of because Philip also added as in the next line, vision is a gut feeling, whereas model is a head thing. Yeah, I think we're getting a pretty clear sense. And so, Eliana, thank you very much for asking that question, because you know, I think that all of these reflections are helping. Bruce liked Philip's comment. And Michael says, vision is also the golden note deep in the forest that bids us enter, the tastes and smells of spring after a long, dank winter. Has it been snowing in Albuquerque? yes, there is something, you know, sunlight has to do with vision, I think. The example that I always think of, it's very kind of trivial, but it's related to what you say, Michael, is if you go outside, especially, you know, if you've been sick and you've stayed inside for several days, and then you go outside and the sun is shining and everything is kind of sparkly, there's a sense of vision there, even though we're just talking about seeing. It's not vision in the sense of a new vision of reality, but you're headed in that direction. And of course, Rinpoche, again and again and again, and in this exercise that was assigned for this week, he talks about this too at one point, we'll talk about light as a gateway to this new vision. I don't know that he puts it exactly that way, but I think it's fair to put those two things together. Okay, well, good. I think that's really important to go through those things. We don't have a lot of time. Let me turn to the exercise. Let me just give one more instance that is from the reading, which I think also helps talk about or helps give you a sense of what models are like. It's this nice image that Rinpoche uses on the first, in the first paragraph of the reading for this week, when he talks about the experience, the underlying experience, and then we apply constructs. And what happens when we apply constructs, and this is really the same thing as applying a model, I would say, is he says it's like trying to touch a fur coat with your gloves on. You're never going to get it. The feeling isn't there. So that's another way, I think, of talking about the difference between a model and a vision. Okay. I may give you a reference to a paper I wrote once that's kind of related to this. Let me look at the paper. I didn't have a chance to try to explore that a little bit, too. Okay. A place to look at that, and this is what I want to spend the rest of the time on. I was going to have us practice with this, but we won't be able to. That's okay. You can do it on your own. But I do want to take a little time to work through this. The exercise for this week was the first three parts of exercise 4 in Dynamics of Time and Space. And so each of those parts has something very specific for you to practice with. But there is something that they all have in common, and that's what I want to focus on just for the next, for the remaining time, another 5 minutes or so maybe. It's just the very beginning of the exercise, the description. Rinpoche writes, "Settle awareness at the very point where reality is conducted into being." So I want to reflect with you a little bit on what that means, the point where reality is conducted into being. Now, there's a way of thinking about what that means, which seems to point us toward the future. So here we are in the present, and the next moment, the reality of the next moment is about to be conducted into being. And in fact, there's a part of the discussion in Dynamics that really points toward the future. Take a look at, you don't have to do it this moment, of course, but at page 99 of Dynamics says something very similar. And it really is presented as an exercise, even though it's not a formal exercise with a number. Rinpoche writes, "Go directly to the point of arising itself, the point in each experience where the future could be said to come into being." So there's the point of arising, and then this exercise talks about the point where reality is conducted into being. Now, you can look at the future. That's one place to look for where reality is conducted into being. But of course, you have to qualify that a little bit, given the fact that we're not using our usual model of one moment, or at least we want to challenge, let's say, the usual model of one moment of time giving way to the next moment of time. In that model, it would make sense to say, well, the future is where reality is conducted into being. But we're talking about something a little, or maybe radically, different from that. Right? What we're looking at is the point where reality is conducted into being. And the sense of conducting into being, this is what I want to suggest, is that it's where reality becomes alive. When reality is conducted into being, and Klaus says here, it's a point of transition, the space between thoughts, openness. And yes, that's right. That's one of the places we can look for that. It is the point of transition. And remember, we've talked about that. That the point of transition is not, point A or point B, and it's not even point A and a half. It's something completely different. It's the dynamic that makes it possible for point A to give way to point B. And it's not really, therefore, a moment in time. It's not a point of time. At this point in time, we say, well, it's not a point in time. When you conduct, so if we go back to just that phrase, the point where reality is conducted into being, that point is not a, just a little instant of time. It's the aliveness, the transition, and the space between and the openness, those are Klaus's words. And Sudi says, it's moving, it's dynamic. Yes, it's exactly, that's the thing. That's where we are looking here. So when Rinpoche says, settle awareness, and it's interesting, settle, you know, makes it sound maybe a little bit still, silent. So, but Sudi is right to say it's dynamic. Being settled there means being at home there. It doesn't mean like just, you know, sink into your chair and fall asleep. it means be there, be present at that moment of aliveness, right? Where reality is conducted into being. So being here is a word that really has the flavor of aliveness to it. And conducting into being is bringing it alive. Right? That's where you want to be in order to do this exercise. And it's also where you want to be, what you want to engage to arrive at a new vision of reality. You know, it's only in that point, you know, it's hard to have the right word. You could say point, you could say moment, but not in a temporal linear sense. It's the point in that moment, that point, that let's call it point. At that point, the point of transition, the aliveness of that moment, that's where vision can come alive, right? That's where the model drops away and you have a vision. So maybe you'd even say in some ways the model is, you know, things don't shift so much. It's not like suddenly you see 10 dimensions instead of 3 or 4, but it's a vision of reality. Even if what you see is kind of hard to say, but it's kind of the same thing. It's a fundamental shift because you are now living in that aliveness. So Klaus writes again, it's exciting to imagine one could stay there. Yes, exactly. That's why it's a vision of reality. You know, the vision is that we could really live in that transition, that point of transition, which is always alive, where reality is always being conducted into being. And did I say that? Yeah, reality is being conducted into being. Okay. I want to say one more thing about that. We're out of time. And that is, it's tempting maybe to adopt a model where you say that you make the transition from something that's not alive, that's kind of dead because it's just governed by a model, into this moment of aliveness. And you know, something does shift. Something gets transformed. We've talked about that quite a bit today. But it's also true that in the moment that you enter this transitional, open, alive place, and Sudi makes the comment that the children are often or mostly alive like that. So there's an aliveness. Definitely they have hold of the aliveness. I don't want to go into this question that comes up again and again about children and their relation to something like a vision of reality. But I'll go into it for one moment. It seems to me that children don't have models so much. And so, yes, they are living in a kind of a visionary world. And that's one of the things that is so inspiring about children sometimes. There's a lot of things, you know, that point in another direction. But that part is really inspiring. So when you make that shift, that transformation, it's not as though you leave something dead behind you. It's everything is transformed in that moment. And what comes alive is the whole of whatever is accessible to you. And that means the previous moment too. So, you know, if you say, okay, I used to live governed by a model, guided by a model, and so experience really wasn't alive and rich for me. But now, this is not such a great way of speaking, but still. But now I really have learned to engage a new vision of reality in which everything is alive. Well, that history of living with models, that's alive in its own way then too. You don't get rid of that. You know, you don't say, oh, that was meaningless. It didn't have value. you transform the past as well as the future. That might be one way of saying it. We sort of have this sense that when we transform reality, it's like now we live in a new world. The old world is dead, you know, is gone. Thank goodness I'm not living that way anymore. To get to aliveness, you don't have to kill what was there before. You can let that be alive too. Transformation doesn't mean that you have to kind of choke off, you know, the part that wasn't transformed. Okay, well, let's stop there. I will do another kind of transition where we cover some of the material that we didn't get a chance to talk about, but I hope that was, I think it was helpful. I found it helpful to really reflect a little on vision. We're activating a vision. It's good to have, to constantly be reflecting back, not to get the right answer. That's not the point, about what it means to have a new vision of reality, but to be reflecting. What is it like? What would it be like to have a new vision of reality and to live within or on the basis of or inspired by that vision of reality? Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.